Tonight's shiur, Parshas Miketz. Parshas begin, Vehi Miketz Shnasayim Yamim. The Midrash says, Ashrei HaGever Asher Sam B'Hashem Miftocho. Happy is the person that puts his trust in Hashem. Who does that refer to? Zehu Yosef. Pasuk says, V'lopana El Rahavim. Says the Midrash, Al Yidei She'amar L'Sar HaMashkim V'Zarchani V'Yizkar Tani Nitas Vu Lo Shtei Shanim. Because he put his trust in the Sar HaMashkim and asked him to get him out of prison, he was punished with 2 years extra in prison. He was supposed to get out after 10 years, he only got out after 12. So the question is obvious. There's an inherent stira in this Midrash. The Midrash begins, happy is the person who trusts in Hashem, who is the epitome of trust in Hashem, Zehu Yosef. And then the Midrash continues, because Yosef didn't trust Hashem, and he asked the Sar HaMashkim to get him out of there, he was punished. So what is it? Was Yosef a Baal Bitachon, or was he not? Second question is, why was he punished because he asked the Sar HaMashkim to get him out? Isn't the person supposed to do Ishtadlus? The famous Beis Halevi, we'll start with that. Beis Halevi says one question answers the other. A Vaday person has to put in Shtadlus, but how much Shtadlus do you have to put in? Each person according to his level. Somebody is at a low level of Bitachon, he has to put in more Shtadlus. If you're higher level of Bitachon, you have to put in less Shtadlus. In Mele, Dafka, because Yosef was on such a high level, Ashrei Hashem, Shama, Samarsam, Bitachon, who is the one that trusts in Hashem? It's Yosef. That's why, for just saying those couple of words, he was punished for an extra 2 years. That's exactly why, because of his tremendously high level, a tremendous high level in Bitach. One answer. Another answer, to understand the Midrash, from Rabbi Yosef Aaron Rabinowitz. He's a rabbi in Warsaw, and once a chassid came to him and said, you know, I went to the doctor, and the doctor told me that I have to stay away from heavy foods. I have to only eat light foods. So I don't know what to do because I really want to have my cholent on Shabbos, and it's not exactly a light food, cholent. So I want to know. Do you think what should I do? What does the Rav suggest? So the Rav told him, I think you could eat the cholent on Shabbos and trust in Hashem. And the power of Shabbos, the Koach of Shabbos, school of Shabbos, everything will be okay, and you won't be harmed. So the Chassid said, really? You mean nothing's going to happen to me if I eat the Cholent? He says, no, I can't promise you that. You better not eat the Cholent. So he said, well, I don't understand. A minute ago, the Rav just said, yeah, don't worry, give the Cholent. Now you're saying, I can't. What's going on? So he said, I'll explain to you. First I told you, you can rely on Shabbos and the Koach HaShabbos, everything will be okay, fine. The minute you questioned that and said, really? Nothing's going to happen? So that means your trust in the power of Shabbos is not so strong. In fact, you have to double check. You have to ask again. Once you have to ask again, that shows you're not putting enough trust in Shabbos, and the Shabbos can't protect you that way. So you better not eat it. Reminds me of also a similar type of maisa. Once an avreich came to Rav Aaron Leitzstein in Shlita and asked him a question of Shailim Bitachon. He says, I want to know, should I buy a Rav Briach door for my apartment? Those are those heavy metal doors with the special locks or whatever. So he says, I want to know, maybe that's called, lack of Bitachon. Is that my regular door? Or, maybe I should put each dollar and I should have this heavy metal door. What does the Rav suggest? So Rav Aaron Leib answered him, he said, if you're asking the question, you should buy a door like that. Meaning, person that trusts, in fact, your question, you're not sure, but okay, that shows that you're not holding on a level, you need a door like that. So too here with Yosef. Had Yosef, he says, asked once, the Sar HaMashkim, hey, remember me? So that's fine. Then that you have to put in your shtadlus. The fact that he asked it again, a second time, that's like the person with the chol. You're asking again? No. When you ask it again, that shows you have a lack of bitachon. And therefore, the Shiloh, maybe even the first time he asked, was because of a shtickle lack of bitachon. That's why he's punished for 2 years. Third answer. The Tam Vidas of Sternbach, Shlita, he says like this. He says, well, why was Yosef punished? He says, Yosef was punished not because he put in hishtalos. We said you have to put in hishtalos. Problem was, is that he pinpointed where the hishtalos is going, where the Yeshua is going to come from. I'm going to ask him, I'm going to ask the Sar Mashkim, and he's going to get me out. That's possible. Vade person has to be the person has to realize, though, that the hishtalos doesn't bring the result. There's no connection whatsoever between effort and result. Hashem brings the result however he wants to bring the result. You just have to put in the effort, but not that your effort brings the result. The fact that Yosef said he told the Sar Mashkim to get him out as if, this is where my Yeshua is going to come from. That's possible. Put ishtalos. But you have to realize Yeshua comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Maaser shows that sometimes extra effort, lefa, can have a, as we see by Yosef, can have an adverse effect. So Maaser with the Brisker Rav, Greece, who was in Warsaw, and this is just beginning of the World War II. And he was staying by this person's house, whatever, and he was very makpid only to eat bread that wasn't chadash. So he took with him, he had with him a few loaves of bread that was from Yashin to make sure he, to keep his minhag. Fine. So then the things started getting worse. It was a Seir Simei Tshuva at the time, and the bombs were falling from the Germans, and it was very, very bad matzah. Anyways, it was just before, it was a Seir Simei Tshuva, right, just before Yom Kippur, and he was eating his last bit of bread that he had as his yashin. So his wife, the Rebbetzin, came in and saw that he was eating, eating his fill, finishing up his bread. So she says, "What are you doing?" He says, "There's a war going out there, and you know that you only, eat things that are yashin, and it's not so easy to get. You can't just go to the store and buy yashin at this time. And you're eating your last bread. What are you going to do? Why don't you save some of the bread for your Sudas HaMasekes? Sudas HaMasekes is a mitzvah. Now you're eating, but Sudas HaMasekes is a mitzvah. Save it for the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur." So he said, "Listen, Lamai said, I don't have to worry about that. What's going to be Erev Yom Kippur in a couple of days from now? Hashem Yazor, right? I'll be tachal." So Cholzot, she pressured him. No. So he said, "Fine, just to make you happy," he said, "I'll put aside two rolls that'll free my Sudas HaMasekes. Make you happy." Right, so he put up aside these two rolls of yashin, and he finished up everything else. What happens? Erev Yom Kippur rolls around, and there's a knock on the door. Opens the door. Who's standing there in the doorway? A baker. And he says, "Oh, I heard that the Rebbe only eats bread that's yashin. Well, I put aside before the war some flour or whatever is yashin, and I made these breads, so you don't have to worry. It's not chadash. The Rav can eat these. No problem here. I'm giving it to you." So the Brisker looks at his wife and says, "See, I told you so. Told you. Guy comes along. Trust Hashem. Fine." So that was that. Half hour later, the same baker knocks on the door. Says, "Yeah." Comes in. He's, "Oh, Rebbe, you're not going to believe what happened." He says, I went home because I also remembered I prepared some fish for you. So you should have fish for your Sudas HaMasekes also. So I got the fish ready, I put it on the platter, and I was coming over here to your house, and what happens? As I'm going on the way, there's a bomb falls in my vicinity, and because of the explosion, I jumped, and the fish fell on the floor, in the mud or whatever, and no more fish. And I feel terrible, and I had this fish ready, and I couldn't bring it, so I apologize, sorry, Rebbe." And he leaves. So afterwards, Brisker Rav turns to his wife and says, you see, if I wouldn't have saved those two rolls for the Sudas HaMasekes, and I would just trust in Hashem, I would have had fish also for the Sudas HaMasekes. Because I put in that extra effort, right, extra shtazel, I shouldn't have, I lost my fish. Okay. Pasuk says, still on the first Pasuk, Vahimi Kesh Nasayim Yamim Ufara Cholem. After 2 years, Paro was dreaming. So the Midrash Gadol says, bothered by the Lashon Cholem. Cholem is present tense. It sounds like he was constantly dreaming. It should have said, Paro Chalam, in the past tense, that he had a dream. Not he's dreaming. So the Midrash answers that, why does it say Cholem present tense? He was dreaming. Because yes, it wasn't just a one-time dream. Right? For already 2 years, Paro, every single night, was having the same dream, you know, with the cows and the things, was having the same dream every night for the last 2 years, but when he woke up in the morning, he forgot it. He had a dream at night, woke up and didn't remember any dream. This continued for 2 years, until now, when he finally woke up and he remembered his dream, and therefore that's the lashon of a parocholem. He was dreaming constantly, every day for the last 2 years, the same dream. So, question's obvious. Why did Hashem have to make it that he was dreaming every night for 2 years the same dream, the dream that Yosef was going to interpret eventually after 2 years? Just let him dream it the last night before Yosef was to get out, which was 2 years later. Why just every night? Just the last night. Let him have the dream, wakes up in the morning, and tells, to, you know, get, they call Yosef and finish. Why did he have to dream every night? So, say a big yesod here. And that is that one would have thought that, you know, what was the big deal, you know, that Yosef was punished, we said, 2 years extra in the prison. Anyways, it was for his good. He had to be in there for 2 years. Why? Because only 2 years later did the dream, Pharaoh have his dream, that he interpreted, and then he was able to get out and become the viceroy of Egypt. And who knows, had he gotten out right away when the Sarmashkim left, and right, you know, after his 10-year term, and right, get out immediately, then he, who knows, he might have just gone back to Potiphar, who knows where, and got lost, and that was the end of it, and he never would have interpreted the dream. So it's dafka his benefit that he was in jail for 2 years. You know, what was a terrible punishment? It was good. Comes along the Midrash and say it's not the case. Why? Because the stage was set for Yosef to come out already after the 10 years was up. Right then, Paro started having that dream. Meaning that if Yosef wouldn't have put in the extra ishtadlis that first day already, Paro already had a dream, he would have woken up, remembered the dream, and he would have gotten out. But because of his lack of extra, because of his extra ishtadlis, Shem pushed it off for 2 more years, and it was only 2 years later that Paro actually remembered his dream. You see from here that sometimes the stage can be set, everything can be perfect, the shoe is right there for the person. Shem says, here, the shoe is ready, here. But the person does something wrong, extra shots, whatever it might be, and ruins it for himself. It's another big yesod midrash. It's a famous vor from the Beis Halevi, but it's kedai to repeat because it's so, I said, so yesodistic. The Midrash says, also in the Pasuk, at the beginning, Miketz, Ketz Sam L'choshech, Pasuk Iniyov, and the Midrash says, Ketz Sam L'Yosef, Kama Yeh Bebeis Asurim, the end, the Ketz means the end has come for the time for Yosef to be in prison, V'kevan Shigia Ketz, since the end came, what happens? U'paro Cholem, now Paro had his dream. Explains the Beis Halevi, like we said, a big fundamental here, and that is, there's a concept called cause and effect. In Hebrew they say it's called siba or misoviv, cause and effect. It says people do not understand, they get things mixed up. People don't understand what's the cause of things in this world and what's the effect. Example, right? A person has an idea, he says, oh, I'm going to go into business, I'm going to buy a certain merchandise, whatever, and sell it and make a profit. What happens? Goes out, buys the merchandise, sells it, and makes a profit. So now, people think, what's the cause and the effect? The cause is, he goes out, he buys the merchandise, and because of that, that caused him, the effect, to make money. So that's not the case. It's the other way around, really. The emes is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to have the money. He was his nigzar shemayim, that he should have this money. How does he get the money? As the money, Hashem puts in his mind to have an idea, buy this merchandise and sell it and have the mind of these people, they should buy the merchandise, whatever, and then he'll get his money. So it's the other way around. Right? It starts with the gezeirah of Hashem, that this person have money, and then the guy has the idea to sell it and makes the money. So the cause and effect is the other way around. Just say same thing, say over here. Right? That Yosef is what Midrash is telling us, says the Beis Halevi. That one would think, what's the cause and what's the effect? Paro had a dream. Okay. And that caused Yosef to get out. Because since he had the dream, and then along came Yosef, interpreted, and that's how he got out. Because Paro had the dream. Says the Midrash, no. Ketz Samla Yosef, in his time in Beis Yisrael, Kevin Shigia Ketz, Paro Cholem. The other way around. Hashem said, now is the time for Yosef to get out. Okay, now Hashem says, now how am I going to get him out? Okay, this is how I'm going to get him out. Paro will have a dream. So it's not that the dream caused Yosef to get out. Because Yosef had to get out, that caused Paro to have the dream. The other way around. It's interesting, you know, people, you know, sometimes, you know, we spoke about before, the Inyan is connected here, that hishtadlis, you know, the effort puts in, and what comes is not connected. The totsot, the result, and hishtadlis, no connection. The person has to put hishtadlis. But the person, you know, what he gets is there's no connection. Like there's a maisa with Sternberg actually brings us down. He says that in his yeshiva, there was the Rosh Yeshiva of Schneider, that's all. He sent an avreich to do fundraising, because the yeshiva was in very, very terrible straits, dire straits. So he went around, going here, going there, and he couldn't came up empty-handed. Went all over the place, couldn't come up with anything. Comes back dejected, didn't make any money for the yeshiva. A couple of days later, knock on the door of the Rosh Yeshiva's office. Out of the blue, this guy comes in and says, I'd like to make a nice donation to the yeshiva. And he gives a beautiful donation, puts the yeshiva back on their feet. After the person left, Rosh Schneider called us avreich in. He says, you know, I want to give you a big yashar koach. I want to thank you for all your efforts. And you, mamash, saved the yeshiva. Because of your efforts, you know, fundraising, going around. Mamash, you saved the yeshiva. So he says, Rebbe, what do you mean? I came back with nothing. He says, no, this guy just came in and gave his big donation to the yeshiva. He says, Rebbe, I'm no connection. I don't know this guy. He's not my relative. Right? I didn't call him up or anything. I'm no connection with the guy. It's not me. He says, no, I know that. But what do you think? It's not that the hishtadlis and the reset and the result. There's no connection. You have to put your hishtadlis in. You went knocking on doors and this one and that one. Never. That was it. That's the hishtadlis. Who says that the result's going to come dafka from the doors that you knock on? Love dafka. Hashem brings the results in His way. All you have to do is put in the effort. You put your effort knocking on doors. Hashem sent this person to give the donation. Had you not knocked on doors, this wouldn't have happened. Came from anyway. So we see that there's no connection between the hishtadlis and the result. But people say, what do you mean? That's not true. You see, it's not the case. Average, you know, let's say in America, you know, the doctor, you know, that studied and medicine is where he is a doctor, probably most of the time makes more money than a guy that's a street cleaner, whatever. Says, we just said hishtadlis has nothing to do with it. They're both doing hishtadlis. Yes, he's making a lot of money, he's not. Why? Because he's a doctor and he's a street cleaner. So you see, it does have a result. No? Teretz says, well, we said now, it's not the case. Meaning, you have to understand the cause and the result. In other words, Hashem, not because he became a doctor, that's why he became rich. No, Hashem wanted him to have money. So Hashem says, you know, this guy wants to have money. How will I make him have money? I'll make him have money. I'm going to make him go to med school and make him become a doctor. And that's how he'll have money. This guy don't want to have money. So what? I'll put in his mind not to go to med school, rather to become a street cleaner, so he won't have so much money. You know, it's the other way around. It's not that, you bring a riot. The guys, you know, people that are, you know, doing these jobs, the rich, the poor, nothing to do with it. That starts the other way. Hashem wants this person to have, and therefore he gives. Say, mashal at the Chafetz Chaim. We said, you know, to show that it's not us, that people lose sight of things. We realize everything's geiras of Kodesh Baruch Hu. So once this country bumpkin, never been in a big city before, he comes to this city and he sees the first time train station. It's like, wow, never saw these huge cars and he never saw such a thing. And he's standing at the train station and looking around, but he's, you know, sitting there or whatever, taking it easy. All of a sudden, he sees a guy coming out with a whistle. Blows the whistle. And he sees all people jump off from their seats and start running to the train. He says, okay. A couple of minutes later, another whistle. The guy whistles again. And he says, oh, now they're really running crazy. Jumping on the train. And then, a minute later, he sees the guy blow a third time. And then the train starts going. So this guy's like, wow, can't believe it. He goes over to the guy at the whistle, and he says, oh, sir, you know, you're unbelievable. You know, I've never seen something like that before. You're something so special. And he starts praising the guy. He's like, hello, what's this all about? He goes, I saw that, how much power you have. You control the whole train. It's because of you that the train, you know, you're making people run all over and people jump on a train and you're making the train go. You know, you blow that whistle and the train goes. It's all because of you. He says, oh, because of me? Because of me? I'm a nothing. He says, there's a guy that drives the train, there's a conductor. And even him, there's the people in the office, see that building over there in the penthouse over there, the boss of the train company. They're calling the shots, they're controlling the trains and everything. What am I, Mr. Petty Person, blowing the whistle, you know, they're doing my job. He says, so too, you know, people think that, wow, look at this, what I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I put this effort, that. It's all Kosh Baruch Hu. He's sitting up there in the tower, he's controlling everything. It looks like the people blowing the whistles are doing the things, but they're not doing anything. It's all Kosh Baruch Hu. Okay. It's a cute word. It says, Perek Mem Alef, Pasuk Lamed. Lamed. Let's get the right Pasuk here. Lamed Gimel. Okay. It says, after Yosef hears the dreams from Pharaoh, he interprets it, and he says, because the dreams, you hear saw it twice, so that's a sign, it's going to happen quickly, whatever. And then the next pasuk says, Ve'ata yirei paro ish navon v'chacham v'shisei ol eretz Mitzrayim. So now, next thing is what? Pharaoh should get a person to be in charge of, over here and to do things. So everybody asks the question, who asked Yosef to tell him what to do? He wanted interpretation. Fine, this is what's going to happen, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine, fine. End of interpretation. What's this? And now, Viata, now, Paro, you should find yourself a person that's going to take care of who asked you to give Eitzes? Famous gosh. That's how a cute shot this year. That you have to read it, Pasuk, differently. It doesn't fit in with the trope, but it's a cute shot. That the word Viata now is not Yosef talking. It's Paro talking. That answers the question. In other words, he tells him what to do, the whole dream, what happened, the interpretation. And then, Ve'ata, that one word, that's Paro now talking. And now? Okay, thank you, Yosef. You gave me, told me about the dream. And now? Now what? Now what do we do? And now, back to Yosef. Yirei Paro, ish navon, you find somebody that didn't. Okay. Another cute one. We find a strange thing, Pasuk Lamentes. It says, after, you know, Yosef says his whole spiel, then Vayomer Paro el Avadav, Hanimtzak hazeh ish, asher ruach elokim bo. Did we ever see a person that's ruach elokim bo? Vayomer Paro el Avadav. Then Paro says to his, then Vayomer Paro, Yosef, he says to Paro, Acharei hodiyu elokim otcha et kol zos, and Hashem showed you all of this, ein nachachom v'nachom. What happens over here? Paro did tshuva? You know, Paro the Rasha Marusha, you know, he's not exactly the biggest God-fearing person in the world. Well, all of a sudden he's talking like a tzaddik, you know. He says, Acharei hodiyu elokim otcha et kol zos, okay. What is Paro doing? He mentioned elokim over here, twice, you know. Well, that's very strange. Some of Levinstein says, cute. He says, you know why? He says, he wasn't going to mention Hashem over here, but Yosef confused him. Meaning, because Yosef, the whole time, you know, Parm calls him out of prison, he gets out of prison, and the first thing, what does it say? V'yan Yosef et Paro lemor. Biladai Elokim yanet shlom Paro. First thing Yosef says is, it's not me. You want to know your interpretation? I just want to tell you, first thing, it's not me, it's Elokim. Right, later on again, Vayomer Yosef Paro, Chalom Chalom Echad Hu, Es Asher Elokim Oseh Higil Paro. What Hashem, why is he telling Paro? And again, Hu Asher Dibarti Paro, Asher Elokim Oseh Heraz Paro. And again, Yosef, Valishanos El Paro, Pamaim Kinafon Hadavar Mes Elokim Memeher Elokim Laso. So he keeps mentioning every Elokim, 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 Elokim. So then Paro got all confused and he says, Elokim, like, oops, you know, he's like so used to hearing, this Elohim business from Yosef, so he started using it. Okay. Fine. Another, perhaps well known for it, though, it says, Vayaku Yosef Esecha Vehem Lo Ikiru. So it says that when the brothers came to Yosef, Yosef recognized them, but they didn't recognize him. So Rashi says, why not? Because when he left, he didn't have a beard. And when he was still by them. And now, he came, and now as the years have passed, he already has a beard, so he didn't recognize him. So they ask, a little bit hard to hear. I mean, all the brothers, you know, they're brothers, they kind of look alike, you know, some of them had beards, maybe they all had beards, whatever at this time. And so Yosef was about to fit in, you know, Mistama. And I was thinking, I think even more, right? Ferris Rashi. Rashi says at the beginning, right, and Periklam and Zion base, Rashi says on the Pasuk, Ela told us Yaakov Yosef, what does Rashi say? That Ziv Ukonin shall Yosef Domila. In other words, he looked exactly like his father, Yaakov. And okay, but Yaakov has a beard now, right? So Yosef has a beard now. So Mistama, this mama is like, you're looking at Yosef, you're looking at his, their father. Mama is like, exactly. So it was pshat that they didn't recognize Yosef. Very hard to hear. So the Rav Shlomo Sobel, he says the following. Very simple. He said, at this point, they didn't know this was Yosef, right? Who do they think it was? Some Russia Marusha, who's running Mitzrayim over here, some Mitzri, right? And Gemara Megillah says, Daf Kaf Ches, right? You're not supposed to look in the face of a Russia. So in Mela, they didn't look carefully at Israel. Had they looked at him carefully, they would have seen. No, but they were not allowed to look at him because they held him as a Russia. So they didn't look at him. Of course, they couldn't tell this is Yosef. Towards the, at the end of the Parsha, it says that the brothers, first Yosef gave them their money back and their sacks. They brought it home. They found the money. And then they went and they returned the money. And they came back again with Binyamin. And then Yosef again told to put the money again back in his sack and put in the goblet into a sack of Binyamin. And they left. And then he sent the one in charge of his house to catch up to them. So the Pasuk says that... he said, he claimed that you took the gviya of my master, and they said, no, yeah, whatever. And it says that he searched from the v'chapes begadol hechel b'katan kila. He started in the oldest one and ended in the smallest one. Okay, so if I ask you, who's the oldest one? What are you going to say? Started from the oldest. The oldest is Reuven, right? So he started in Reuven, finished in Binyamin. Strange midrash. Midrash says, begadol hechel ze shimon. V'katan kila ze Binyamin. Since when is Shimon the oldest? Pella. Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin says, Givaltik Pshat over here. Says that the one Yosef sends, this guy, this Mamuna, right, sends Yosef sends him to go after the brothers, right? Play the game, you know. So he goes, though, he goes to them. And he says, you took the goblet. So what was their answer? They said, come on, why are you suspecting this? It's ridiculous to suspect us. We take, why? He says, you put money, we found money in our sacks. Now, when we found the money in the sacks the first time, we could have just kept it. But we didn't. We returned the money. So if we return the money that we had, so surely we're not going to go steal a goblet. And the money that we had, we could have kept, we returned. So of course we're not going to go stealing. And in fact, Rashi says this is one of the 10 kalvachomers in the Torah. There's 10 kalvachomers in the Chumash. This is one of them. And they made a kalvachomer. Yes, if that's the case, why did he not believe them? And why did he have to go check? They had a kalvachomer. Why did he go check? He says gevaltik. He says, fine. I accept your kalvachomer. You're right. Kalvachomer, if you gave the money back, that's a sign. Of course you're not going to steal. But he says, but wait a minute. Two of you guys didn't give the money back. So there's no raya. Who are the two? Shimon was in prison in Egypt the whole time while they came with the money in their sacks back home, and they found the money. Shimon wasn't there. Binyamin also didn't have money in his sack. He was at home. He didn't come yet. Memele, Shimon and Binyamin, you can't prove them with the kalvachomer. Well, we return the money. Of course, we're not going to steal. That applies for all the brothers, but not Shimon and Binyamin. Therefore, says the Midrash, Begadol Hechel, who did he begin to look at? Shimon. And who did he finish with? Binyamin, because those were the two that the kalvachomer didn't work to prove their point. Okay, Miketz almost always fall out in Hanukkah. So the Darshanim like to find connections in the Sedra to Hanukkah. Okay, the most famous one everybody says is it's actually a Pella, but at the end of every Parsha, it tells you in the Chumashim, it tells you how many Psukim are in the Sedra, and then it gives a simon, and it's words that have the same gematria as that amount of Psukim in a Parsha. Very strange thing. Miketz is the only Parsha that besides telling you the Psukim, Kuf Mem Vav Psukim, it says how many words there are also. Pella. Why Dafka Miketz is the right time is how many words there are. How many words there are? 2025. So they say, why is it telling me the words? Because person has to light Hanukkah candles, right? Each near each echad neifer. The ikar mitzvah is one candle a night. A near in gematria is what? 250. 50 and 200, 250. Right? 8 nights, 8 times 250 is 2,000. So there's 2,000 and 25. 25 is, of course, Hanukkah, Kafe Kislev. 2,025, Hanukkah, you light 8 nights. Okay, that's so famous. It's one not so famous remez that it says in the Seder the following words. Utfoach tevach ve'achim. When the brothers came, he told his Yosef told his servant to slaughter the meat and get it prepared. And I'm going to serve them a suda. So the lashon there is utfoach tevach ve'achim. So first, Rebbe Zel Yerabba says that if you take the letters beginning from the last two words, the tevach ve'achim, the ches and tevach, ches and in ve'achim, it's ches vav hey chaf nun nun sofid right nun. That's letters of Hanukkah. Remember the Hanukkah. Then the Shiri Mincha says, "Utvoach tevach vechein." Utvoach in gematria is 25, and then tevach are the same letters. You can say beches bechodesh tes. Tevach is bechodesh tes. The tes ninth month is Kislev. So therefore, we have utvoach is 25 bechodesh tes, the ninth month of Kislev, and that's Chanukah. One last remez over here in that. That the letters utvoach, right, vav tes beis ches, tevach, but the first two letters only, tes beis. So if you take, again, vav tes beis ches and then tes beis, the gematria is 36, which is the amount of candles one uses during the whole 8 days of Hanukkah, 36. And the extra ches, because we didn't use the extra ches and tevach, that's for the 8 shamashim. So we have another remez in for Hanukkah. Just one last in Vort on Hanukkah. That was from the Parsha. Famous question everybody asks, the Beis Yosef's question, right? Why are we celebrating Hanukkah 8 days when they found the Parshemen was enough for one day, so the miracle was really only 7 days. One day they had enough oil for us. The miracle was only 7 days, so why are we celebrating 8 days Hanukkah? Okay, so the Beis Yosef asks a question, the Beis Yosef gives an answer. What is the Beis Yosef? He gives a couple, few answers, but one answer he gives is that they knew it would take 8 days to get new pure oil. So they said, okay, we got to make do with this one pot for one day, and make do for 8 days. So what did they do? They divided it out into 8 parts, and they used each day an eighth. And what happened? The nace was that little bit of that was supposed to last only for an eighth of a day, every day, that eighth of a day lasted for the whole day. So therefore, even the first day of the 8 days was also a miracle. Every day, because every day they only had an eighth and it lasted for the full day. That's what the Beis Yosef says. Pri-Chadesh asks on that, and he says that it's a little schwer to say this. Why? Because the mitzvah of the menorah, it says you have to put in enough oil to last from the evening until the morning. Mi boker, mi erev ad boker, lashon pasuk. So you can't put in a little bit like that. You have to put in the full amount. It's going to last you for the all night. And Elamai, what are you going to say? That they knew a nes was going to happen? Ain somchin al nes. So Mistama, they didn't know. Because even if they did, ain somchin al nes. And so how could they have only put an eighth of an oil in every night? The Chidush Yerim, therefore, gives a different answer. It avoids these problems. He says the following. You have enough oil for one night. Okay? Now, how can you make the same amount of oil, enough for one light night, last for 8 times the amount, 8 days? Very simple, he says. You use thinner wicks. Right? How much oil gets taken up is all depending on how thick your wicks are. You have a thick wick, it absorbs a lot of oil. Use thinner wicks, it takes longer to, your oil goes much further. Memela, so it's very simple. What did they do? They used the full oil, put all the oil in or whatever, but they used wicks that were an eighth of the size. So it could last 8 times longer, the oil. And that's how they had it for 8 days. The obvious question is, so there's no nace. There's no nace there. What was the nace then? 8 days, they had to use thinner wicks, they had oil for 8 days, and great, wonder, there's no miracle. What was the miracle? Says the Chidush Yerim, the miracle was that what happens if you use a thin wick? It'll take a long time to eat up the oil, but the flame's not so, it's a tiny, tiny little flame as well. The miracle was that same skinny little wick brought a nice big fire as if it was a full wick. And that was what every night. Every night that thin wick burned, looked like it was a big flame. And therefore that was the first night as well. Every night was that, and therefore the miracle was all 8 nights, and that's why we celebrate 8 nights. And he says, with this, we also can explain why we see by Hanukkah the Indian of Hiddur. There's Mahadrin, Mahadrin min Mahadrin. What's Hiddur? Hiddur means beauty. Because the whole nace of Hanukkah was the beauty of the light. It was supposed to be a tiny little light. You can hardly see it. And it ended up being a beautiful big light. So since there was the beauty of the light, therefore, that's why he says there's an Indian of beauty in Hanukkah. Mahadrin, Mahadrin min Mahadrin. And I would like to add my own two cents and say that that's also the connection with what we say in Al-Nisim, which is the other miracle of the war. Then what was the war? We say in Al-Nisim, right? The Rabbim biyad ma'atim, right? And Giborim biyad chalashim, meaning what? These little wicks, these skinny people, these skinny chalashim, right, that had no battle with day, fought like they're big fat wicks. You know, went out and killed those Yavanim, right? There was the chalashim, the giborim, they're chalashim, they're like these thin wicks, but still they fought as if they're big, just like the candles, which represent the candles. They're little wicks, yet they had these beautiful big flames. So the Hashem, we should. Moshe Asa Hashem Nisim Lavosenu Hashem Yaseh Lanu Nisim by Bimhera Bizman Hazeh.